If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to the Songwriter Connection, the podcast that delves deep into the art and heart of songwriting. Each week, we gather around the dining room table to uncover the stories behind the songs. We invite you to join us on a journey to the creative minds of the songwriters who shape the melodies of our lives. From Nashville, Tennessee, here's your host, Dave Lenihan.
I am so glad that you've chosen to spend a little time with us today on the Songwriter Connection podcast. I'm very excited about our guest. We've got some great stories to share with you. And I have to tell you, I met Steve Trudell at our 1 millionth stream party, which was at Commodore Grill back in the fall. Just an interesting guy. And we talked for a little while, and I thought, got to have you on the podcast. We finally get to it. And what's really interesting about this now, Steve, is that as of this morning, we just reached 2 million streams.
Wow.
2 million worldwide streams and downloads. And I want to thank all you listening for making that happen. We are going to celebrate, by the way. This is we're taping this last day of April for a June 11th publish. So if it's June 11th, that's how it's scheduled. This Friday at the local between 5 and 6, we are going to celebrate 2 million streams with a live, our very first ever live Songwriter Connection podcast. And I've got a really big guest, a guy named Chris Wallen, who's written songs like Don't Blink and many, many others. So we're very excited about that. If you're in the Nashville area on the 13th, 5 until 6 at the local is where we're going to be. And I hope that you'll make time to come out and join us and celebrate along with us. Well, let me tell you about Steve Trudell. Steve, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
I'm so happy that you took time. I know you are extremely busy.
I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, you do a lot. And let's just tell you a little bit about him. Steve grew up in the 70s, as did I. I was in Cleveland. You were in Detroit.
Well, on the road as well.
And but, on the road a lot. Yeah. Because your dad, Johnny Trudell, played horns for all the Motown sessions. Yeah, a lot of them, right?
Oh, yeah. He was a ranger, a contractor.
Yeah.
You know, he did some conducting, and he was a lead trumpet player there. Yeah, so, for all those hit records, you know. Amazing. He was there for a long time.
So you were kind of born into the business, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I look at the list of people that you work with and have been a part of, the Temptations, the Supremes, the Four Tops, all those Motown acts. Dizzy Gillespie your dad played with?
Yeah, we used to do some things called the Trumpet Summit. There would be about six or seven trumpet players. And,
oh, man.
You know, but I was roadieing at that time for him, you know. Yeah, I was young.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
well, you've learned the business from the bottom up, all of it.
Yeah, it was a progression, you know, from roadieing, you know, to managing his affairs and contracting. Then you know, contracting the orchestras. So, you know, I would roadie as a kid for some of the Motown groups, and then but later on I contracted orchestras for them.
Mm-hmm. You know, when you talk about contract, you're hiring. Is that what you mean?
I started out in the state of Michigan, and then that grew to the Midwest, that grew nationally, and then it grew internationally.
Fantastic.
Know, and so it went into a lot of other, but that, you know, a lot of other groups. But that was my father's business. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because I was working side by side or for him, you know, that evolved as well.
Yeah.
And then I took it globally. You know,
and you work with the Trans-Siberian Orchestra for like the last 30 years?
Trans-Siberian, yeah, it's almost 30 years.
I'm looking at some of these people that you've worked with in the past. Billy Joel, Josh Groban, Peter Gabriel was always one of my favorites.
Oh, yeah.
Michael Bublé, Sarah McLachlan, Paige and Plant, are you kidding me? Joni Mitchell, oh, man.
I did her last tour that was both sides now. I contracted a bunch of orchestras for that.
Wow.
You know, Vince Mendoza was the conductor, and he did those... There's one or two records there, but
wow.
I think that was the last stuff that that she did that was touring wise. I know she just did some recent things at the Hollywood Bowl and stuff, but So I don't. That's a long time ago. But.
This list goes on and on. I also see Rod Stewart, Smokey Robinson, that guy who plays with the Eagles, Vince Gill.
We did Christmas stuff for him.
Did you?
Yeah, Christmas, you know, orchestras and his wife.
Amy
Grant, I did some orchestras for her too. I just saw him at a guitar show and we were talking about the Christmas tour stuff long time ago, you know. But it's probably been maybe well over maybe 400 or 500 artists that I've worked for, you know.
Incredible.
Whether it's one-offs or full tours or
yeah,
special event kind of things or, you know, so much of that, you know. So
you just got off tour, didn't you?
I did, yeah. Well, I'm still going right now. I'm doing Disturbed.
Ooh.
They had a record, Sounds of Silence, and we've been doing that for about eight years.
Incredible voice.
Yeah,
what's his name?
David Draymond.
He's
special. That's a really special band. That band's been around for a long time, and it's really solid, and they go now. People just, everybody wants to see them, and this has been a very successful tour for them.
Sounds of Silence brought them up to a whole new level.
It was interesting, yeah. And I think a friend of mine, Susie Katayama, she wrote that arrangement for that, I believe, and, you know, and then, and you know, the arrangers and the producers or the David Fosters of the world, they'll write and, you know, and arrange and produce. And then, you know, when it gets to the road, when it's time for a tour, then that's where I come in usually, you know, with Trans-Siberian Orchestra and Michael Bublé and Josh Groban. Wow. They've all been, you know, neck and neck for me.
Yeah.
25, 30 years.
Wow.
You know, those guys, you know, all three of those things, but, you know,
you know, I always thought that the arrangement is a big part of songwriter. And since we're a songwriting podcast, how do you feel about that? I mean, because you do, I know you're a writer too. And
yeah.
So do you think of the way, when you're writing, are you thinking of how you'd arrange it?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I'm thinking about top line and I'm thinking about lyrics and I'm in a precarious position. Maybe it's unique or something. I don't know, but I learned about arranging orchestration from my dad and from my uncle. My uncle was David Vandepit out of Detroit. He's the one that did What's Going On and records like that. He was one of the younger guys at Motown that my dad brought in because my father was responsible for the arranging staff because Paul Reiser was the main arranger there.
Yeah.
Paul was already there, I think, when my dad got there. And which was probably 1959, 1960, 61 in there. You know?
59.
And they 60. And they were, yeah.
So he was there for all those.
He was there until 73 or 4.
Oh.
Then they moved to Los Angeles, and then my father went with Paul Anka.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And others. My dad contracted for many, many, you know, probably 1,000, 1,500 artists, you know. And he just went and went and went until
one of those A-list studio guys, too, right?
He was, yeah. There's a lot of hit records. I hear his work every day, whether it's in a grocery store or you're getting your teeth drilled out in the dental chair. You're hearing my girl, you know, or Papa was a Rolling Stone or all that, you know.
All of those songs your dad
made. Yeah, he made musical history.
Yeah, with the Funk Brothers, right?
That was, oh, God, those guys were, they were always at our house or, you know, Earl Van Dyke. And, they were like, you know, I don't want to say they were my uncles because they weren't, but they were like that.
Yeah,
you know, they were, you know, they were always around, and because they just didn't do Motown, they did gigs.
Yeah.
These were working musicians.
They got their play, huh? Yeah.
Yeah, well, my father was sort of the Doc Severinsen of Detroit, if you will, and he would work with Doc a lot.
Did he?
Oh, yeah. They were friends. Yeah.
Wow.
And he had certain friends, you know, like Frank Sinatra Jr. was his, I think when my father was out of high school after that, maybe in his early 20s, I think he was a music director for him, and they toured and traveled a lot, and, you know, I have some letters that my dad wrote to my mom, when we were, you know, either being born or whatever, you know, when they were married, when they were first married, letters from the road. And it's interesting, you know, he'd write a letter, say, oh, I'm staying at, I'm staying at the Sinatra's house, the parents in wow. like Fort Lee, you know, New Jersey. I'm staying here for a few days,
incredible.
You know, with Frank, because we're on the road and we stopped here and his mom was doing our laundry or cooking for it. You know,
wow.
it was that kind of stuff with yeah. him, you know. Yeah. He was, my father was a very humble man.
Yeah.
You wouldn't know. I mean, you know, he was really a cat. He was that real thing, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I hear people use that word, the cats, and this, yeah. I'm kind of like, you know.
Overused. Nashville cats. Detroit cat.
Yeah, well, this guy was, you know, he was part of that. He was, you know, you'd be around him and Dizzy Gillespie would be there, or he'd be playing a jazz festival or whatever. And, you know,
your dad had some jazz records out for a while,
too. Yeah, he had his own thing, too. And
I love jazz music.
He did a lot of stuff. Yeah. You know, he just mm-hmm. really...
did it all.
He canvassed it, and but he had to work, and he had to mm-hmm. he had to make a living, and so contracting.
Yeah.
So if you came through Detroit, you know, if Wayne Newton came or Tony Bennett or, you know, it was a turnover mm-hmm. Every week, every other week, there was somebody, the Smothers Brothers, you know, the whoever needed an orchestra, you know, known and unknown,
mm-hmm.
you know, and he did that. If you went to Detroit, you knew Johnny Trudell. You knew that you would get quality players. Yep. And then you could pick him up and then go to, if you had to do Chicago or you had to do anything in the Midwest,
mm-hmm.
you know. He would go to Las Vegas a lot and play, but he wasn't doing it where I started doing it. He wouldn't go out and do 50 cities. Mm-hmm. He wouldn't go to Russia or China or the UK or wherever, you know, Europe, all of, you know. Right, I started canvassing, you know, the promoters would start asking me, could you do this, could you do that tour? And the conductors would know of me, and that started up that way. But that door was open because of my father.
Yeah.
I don't know that I would have chosen
that path, right?
I don't know. Yeah. It was very difficult. And it's almost a time gone by now.
Right.
Only so many, very few artists use an orchestra. It's expensive to do, and
I'll bet.
And you're sort of the whipped cream after the fact, or after someone's kind of made. That made their way, because you wouldn't. A new artist wouldn't go, you know, I'm going to go on the road.
I'm going to take a whole orchestra.
We need to pick up an orchestra or a choir every night. And then they look at these bills and they're like, no. and you know, and I did it pretty reasonable for people, and I think that's why we were able to do it.
That's good. Yeah,
You know, but I do think in the future it's a time gone by.
Yeah,
I don't think you're going to see the Johnny Trudells. Somebody that does it all and has to do it all. People are very specialized now.
Yeah, so. They are, aren't they? Yeah,
I think they are. Mm-hmm. You know,
mm-hmm.
And to be good at all that,
oh, man.
Be good at, you know, contracting or playing the trumpet, and, you know, writing arrangements, you know. These guys would be at Motown sitting in the car, you know, writing an arrangement.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I kind of remember some of that. I was a kid.
You must have some serious cool stories.
I remember What's Going On. I remember going to the Motown Stewart. I went to all of that because that was recorded at a place called Golden World, which was on Davison in Detroit. It was kind of as a hood.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember going to... with my uncle over to Marvin Gaye's house, and he was married to Anna Gordy, who was Barry's sister.
Barry's sister, yeah.
And that was on Outer Drive. And I remember Barry Gordy's parents lived across the street there. What a great thing to have your in-laws living across the street from you when you're Marvin Gaye.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't...
You watched that all come together, the
Well, I was a kid, you know, and I was only roadieing, you know. I wasn't doing business. I was a boy, you know. I'm 8 years old, you know, 10 years old. But I was observing. I would observe those people like Smokey Robinson. Maybe he'd be conducting in the studio. People don't know that I don't think that that guy would be in there waving his arms, you know. Mm-hmm. But there were many mighty, mighty men there, too, that I got to know. There was Maurice King. Mr. King was sort of the, he was the grandpa of all that. You know, he would come to my dad's house on Sundays for dinner always. And he was a force in Detroit.
Yeah.
You know, he was a guy that had worked with, like, Billie Holiday and
wow,
all of that. So I had a history of knowing, that was before my time, but, you know, I remember working with people that people don't know of with my dad when I was a kid, roadieing, you know, again.
Yeah.
I always kind of sort of keep it in different chapters. That's when I roadied and I attempted writing lyrics, and you know, I would sit in the basement and write my lyrics, and I had half a song. My dad would be like, and he was successful.
No,
because there was nothing for him to do. He's not going to write a song with me. We didn't like,
yeah,
you know.
But did he write some?
No.
Yeah.
He would write arrangements. Mm-hmm. No, I don't. I mean, maybe, but he was fascinated that I could write the words. He thought I was good at it. And so he would encourage me.
When you talk about arrangements like that, and is that, and that's something you do?
I can write arrangements if someone's there with a violin. I can help write arrangements. I would say, let's not say I write arrangements.
Okay.
That I hear it in my mind. I hear what's going on there. So like when I would work with my uncle, David Vandepit, he was a master. But I would sit with him and sing to him. Mm. And I would say, oh, could it go like this here? Or, you know, let's have the violins going down here or going up. So it was... it was a sketch.
Yeah.
But over time, that developed for me to the point where now I can really sit down with a string player and get something on paper.
Yeah.
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 You know?
So the question I wanted to ask is people that work with the arrangement like that, different from the songwriters, do they work on a per hire, work for hire, or do they get a portion of the song?
I don't know what kind of deals those, you know, sort of the big time arrangers make for themselves. But if I'm hiring somebody, I've hired many arrangers and I've hired many conductors for tours.
Mm-hmm.
But if I need a piece of music written, you know, like I worked with Dave Chappelle on these projects where he would have all these different artists each night. He'd have a big orchestra. Mm-hmm. He would do his comedy, and then he would have Janelle Monáe, or he would have Erykah Badu, or The Roots, or whatever, you know, Nas, you know, and he had who did Illmatic with my orchestra, you know. So these, he'd have a different artist each night, but then he would want something like, he's like, I want an arrangement for Goldfinger, or I want to come out to this, or I want to walk off stage to this. I want this arrangement of a James Bond song. So I sit down with Charles Floyd, who's a conductor, arranger, fantastic. That I worked with Natalie Cole.
Oh man.
And did the Unforgettable tours with him, and and he was always her conductor, and Earth, Wind and Fire. Mm-hmm. I did some of those touring stuff with him with orchestra. So I knew Charles from my dad's days.
Yeah.
And he's fantastic. He's he'll conduct the Boston Pops and stuff like that. But, you know, when you need that type of writing, Charles can write anything.
Mm.
And he can conduct it. He's so good. So I would go to him and say, look, you know, Dave Chappelle wants this arrangement of this, you know. Mm-hmm. So I'm hands off at that point. I just make okay. I'm doing the business of that.
Okay. I got you.
Yeah. So
I wanted to talk about, again, we talked about how the arrangement is so important to the song. And one of the first lessons I, through NSAI, we talked about My Girl. Okay.
Yeah.
So again, back to the Motown days, where would that song would have been without the, dun, 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 you know, that little riff, that little piece that was put in probably by the Funk Brothers, right?
On the spot. Yeah, that was Smokey Robinson, man. Mm-hmm. You know, that guy wrote that. I don't know if he co-wrote it with somebody, but that was his, that was his stuff, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then you have, you have the horns coming in, and that was probably Paul Reiser that wrote that horn arrangement.
Mm-hmm.
There's a video of that you can find online. There's an actual recording in the studio that day, and you can see my father there
Oh wow!
with his with his trumpet, you know, you can, it pans by, you can see Smokey's conducting and you see everybody in there. What I remember about that in that original little studio in Detroit, where they have the museum and stuff, was that they would all cram in there and they would have, you know, there were people from the Detroit Symphony, what was his name? He was the guy that my dad brought into that. My father brought the Detroit Symphony there.
Jeez, that's awesome, and
all that. You know, he got things organized there. You know, he was doing his thing. You know, but he brought a lot to that company. He's an unsung hero there for certain. And there was a man called Hank Cosby there who, you know, he wrote Tears of a Clown, things like that. But Hank was a contractor there too. But Hank was one of those guys that did a little bit of everything. I just, all those mighty, mighty men that were there, that's what you grew up with. Got to see that.
Yeah.
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 But then things changed for me, and the Jackson 5 came into it, and I really loved that. My dad took me there to meet them, and
like I was a kid then.
Yeah, I remember that specific day when we were having dinner. Like I was across from my dad, like you were, same thing. Today. I can remember it clearly. Uh-huh. I don't know how old I was. I was a little kid, but my dad. Would come home and sometimes he wouldn't be in the best of moods. He worked so hard and he'd have to go play. He had a show band at the Rooster Tail. So at night he's working with, you know, Tony Bennett and all that, you know, and Les Paul and Mary Ford and, you know, Peggy Lee, and they had a turnover there. So he had the show band there. It was a dinner theater on the Detroit River. And it was nationally and internationally known. It's called the Rooster Tail. So he had the Rooster Tail band for 15 years too.
They had the fountains
and shit behind the band, and I had all that going, you know, and it was
wonderful.
So, you know, he's coming out of Motown, and then he's exhausted, and he's going to do that.
Yeah.
You know,
he worked a lot of hours in a day, didn't he?
As many hours as you could have.
That's a special person there with a lot of passion.
And his whole life.
He's no longer with us, right? He passed.
Yeah, he passed a couple of years ago. Yeah. Yeah. And
I want you to look him up. If you're not familiar, look him up.
Yeah.
And your uncle, too.
David Vandepit. Yeah, there's some really cool pictures online I saw recently of my uncle and Marvin Gaye and working on What's Going On. He's sitting at his piano in his living room at that house on, you know, and they got those cigarette ashtrays filled up and shit. And these guys would drink scotch. And my dad didn't smoke, but my uncle did. And that's what my uncle passed like 60 something years old from smoking. He was really, I think, one of my father's favorite arrangers, and they were like brothers.
Were they?
Yeah. If David could write it, Johnny could play it. You know, I did get everybody together though. Mm-hmm. Many years later,
you did. You did a reunion thing.
I did a reunion, and it was at the time where this guy Al was making Standing in the Shadows of Motown, which was a documentary movie kind of thing. You know.
Yeah.
And we had gone to see that. My uncle and my dad were originally involved in it, but they didn't care for how the business of it was going with this guy. And I don't know how much they believed in him, you know. Al was a nice guy. I talked to him a couple times, and his heart, I think, was in the right place. But I can't speak for Al Slutsky, but he's a talented man, you know. But I think when you get into a situation, you start opening Pandora's box. There's a reason these boxes are closed.
Yeah.
There's a reason that the Beatles aren't together anymore. That's their reasons.
Yeah.
There's a reason why stuff musically, it's funny with music because people want it to go on and on and on.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always had kind of a different opinion on that, but I don't tend to live in the past too much, although it probably sounds like I do.
We're talking about this,
you know. Well, yeah, I'll talk about it and stuff, what I know about it, but I didn't make the Motown records. My father did, you know. I was an observer, but I did work for him, and all those men knew me.
A lot.
Well, the men knew me, and then they would have me work for, like, Jimmy Wilkins had an it was an all black big band out of Detroit, and they were awesome, man.
Yeah.
And Jimmy and Ernie Wilkins, they were arrangers, and Ernie was lived in like Switzerland or somewhere. He was a sax player and arranger. He was a known dude.
Yeah.
So these are all these different people and all these different backgrounds that I could go work for and roadie for.
Man, I can't imagine. You're just absorbing all this.
Yeah, and I was absorbing it. But I was listening to your T-shirt.
You got your Quadrophenia.
which we can talk about that because I did that. You know,
but you did this tour.
I did Quadrophenia with Pete Townsend. Yeah.
Did you really?
Yeah, yeah. But that was later. But that's when I was doing my own thing without my father.
When did you start doing your own thing without your dad? When did that all...
It's about 17, 18 years old.
No kidding.
Yeah, there was a man, Maurice King, that I mentioned from Motown. Yeah. He was a conductor for the Spinners.
Yeah.
Which was a cool group.
Sure was.
They were a Motown group, but then they were Atlantic Records, and that was more Philly driven.
Yeah.
But they were all Detroit guys. I think they lived there, but this was the original Spinners, you know. Felipe Wynn and then he passed away. The other singer, boy, he was great. Mm. He did stuff like Cupid and all that. But
that was
my first contracting job
with the Spinners.
I contracted like 12 horns for them. Mm. But they were my dad's people that I contracted, you know. So it was. But I got the job, and then afterwards, Mr. King called my dad, said he did a good job, you know, and I got paid, and I was like, oh, so I went from making $35 to making $400, wow. You know, and was so that was awesome, because I had a Chevette, and I had a pickup truck with a hole in the floor, you know, and but boy, when you had all that, I got a lot more girls with that kind of stuff.
I'll bet you did.
Yeah. You buy a sports car, you're not getting any girls, but if you have a Chevette...
Yeah.
Or if you have a pickup truck with a hole in the floor, you're getting girls.
You know?
Because they're going to save you. They're going to, oh, I feel sorry for him, you know?
I remember the first Corvette I had. We had a Chevette. We had this old Chevette.
And right on.
We rode it into the ground, you know?
Yeah.
And we were trading it in on this Corvette that I absolutely fell in love with, you know? And I remember the salesman go, you got anything to trade? I go, well, yeah, I do. He goes, what do you have? So I got a Vette.
yeah.
1980 Vette, which,
yeah.
He goes, that's good. 19, how many miles? And I was like, oh, oh, did I mention it was a Chevette?
Right, yeah.
He died laughing, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But that was what was going on. Yeah. I was working for my dad. And then I got a contracting gig.
Mm-hmm.
But you know something happened that I feel like was pivotal was
there
was this, they were building this arena called the Palace of Auburn Hills. And the Pistons played there, the Detroit Pistons. And it was a very successful place.
Sure.
They had that building. They had a place called Pine Knob, which is still there. And that palace was just recently leveled, and the Pistons moved down to Detroit to Little Caesars Arena, which is a bigger place.
Yeah,
but
pizza,
and there, exactly. But there was a place called Meadowbrook, which was about, I think about 5,000 seats, an outdoor venue. So they had these three venues, and these gentlemen, Bill Davidson, who owned Guardian Glass, and these other gentlemen that my father played their corporate gigs and gigs at their homes and stuff. These were really prominent gentlemen in the Jewish community. And my father was sort of their orchestra guy. His big band, because he had this big band that did corporate gigs and weddings and things like that too. So he had a lot of irons in the fire.
Sure.
It was tuxedo. Everybody wore, you know, the music stands and all that. And so I roadied for that and I booked it too.
And you booked it too?
I started booking that. And that's when I started.
You know, really going. Coming into your own.
Now. Well, yeah, because I yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And things started moving for me. Mm. But I remember that my father asked them or said, look, my son, they went needed a contractor, a house contractor for these three buildings.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a community orchestra involved with it, and it wasn't cutting it. The artists would come through town, and they're like, where's Johnny Trudell? We need some shit here. Mm-hmm. You know, this isn't cutting it.
Wow.
And, you know, you need some cats, so to speak, like we say, that he
bring in the cats,
man. Yeah, that could play,
yeah,
guys that would play with Doc Severinsen's band or play behind Sinatra or whoever it was.
Best of the best.
Yeah. Well, really, in each city they had people, but yeah, these are the best Detroit people, mm-hmm. and guys that lived in Toledo or guys that lived in Lansing or where, you know, in the surrounding area, Cleveland, whatever, they yeah. would come in to play with you know, if Johnny was contracting something. So mm-hmm. anyway,
wow.
So I got this gig. My father sent me to a meeting with this man, and he looked at me over breakfast, and he was like, "No, I'm hands off here. You're too young. You're not getting this job." And I was like, "But I could do it. I know what to do."
Yeah, how old then? 17, 18, 19?
No, 20.
20, early 20.
20, early 20, yeah.
Okay.
23, 24.
And hey, the Beatles, man. How old were they?
Whatever, yeah, yeah, but yeah. somehow this man changed course in a matter of a half hour at this. His name was David Hermelin. He was a really cool guy.
Yeah,
he was a philanthropist, a real estate mogul. This guy was a force.
Wow,
you know, and he'd have these political dinners at his house, and he'd have presidents over and all this wow. shit. And my dad would play, and I'd roadie, you know, and but you know,
crazy.
Yeah, but so he gave me the job. He said, "All right, I'm going to make one phone call for you." And he called the building, which was against his grain. He was like, "I'm not getting involved in the booking part of this shit," you know. But he called, and they were booking. You know, nice. This was an arena, you know, and, yeah. and so it was a lot of, you know, it was a big deal. Huh. And I got the contracting job.
That's awesome.
I guess they felt. I don't know that it was political for him to call or what. I'm sure it was, but I did it, and that turned into a lot of relationships for me, and that's where touring started out of there.
It gave you a chance to really prove yourself, didn't it?
Yeah, because the Moody Blues came through, and I did one orchestra, and they're like, "Could you do some more for us? Would you go to like Cleveland? Would you go here? Would you go?" And I was doing this, you know, with no cell phone, no computer, cell phone. Nothing, yeah. you know, and I'm booking 85 musicians.
Ah, that's
and you're like, "Yeah, I can do this," and I'm thinking, "Can I do this?" You know. I don't have that. I didn't have that much doubt because I knew I had done wow. a lot with my dad already. So that's how that started.
So you knew how to do it, yeah.
Yeah,
so.
But there was one pivotal show, and that was the first one I did was with Dionne Warwick, and it was at Meadowbrook. Mm. And that man and his wife, the Hermelins, came in to that show, and they were on the side of the stage. She came off stage, and she came right up to me all soaking wet, and she hugged me, and she said, "Steve, thank you for the orchestra. You did a good job. Quality of what your father..." She said something like that, and he saw this.
Wow.
You couldn't have a better stamp.
You couldn't?
No.
That, the endorsement? So, yeah. Endorsement.
And then from there on, it turned into... I contracted that building till they tore it down.
Unreal.
Yeah. Great. At 25, 30 years or whatever it was.
Yep.
But a lot came out of there, and I got to know...
A lot of the
promoters, and I got yeah. to know the Live Nation people, and then they started asking me to do things, and... There were opportunities, the Rod Stewart thing and Page and Plant, that, you know, they gave me dates and to do contract, and there were gracious people. Mm-hmm. There were people that would help people. I'm really big on that. That's really important to me. When someone asks me to do something, if it's free or if it pays, I just do it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not gonna sit around and negotiate everything.
Yeah.
I always say yes.
Pretty awesome.
Yeah.
You have a trouble saying no like me? My wife goes, "You got to learn to say no."
Oh. Yeah, no, I've always been sort of freewheeling and, yeah. You yeah. know, never had children, never. I've always been like a monk. I'm devoted to this. And
awesome.
And this is what I do. And it's your life, and it's mm-hmm. part of your life. And it's, you know, does it define me, though? You got to be careful of that, because I can be a workaholic, you know.
Yeah, so, you could.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, we always talk about, you know, here on this podcast, we preach a lot about you got to have the passion for what you do. How bad do you want it, you know? Your dad worked how many hours a day? You worked how many hours a day? I mean, because, and you did it because you had a passion for it. And it wasn't just the money. It was the love of music. And you got to meet a lot of great people, and you've done some magical things. So I know we've talked a lot about what's in the past. So I'm going to talk about things that you're doing now mm-hmm. and a bit about your writing and your writing style, but I got to take a little break. So
yep.
don't go away. We'll be right back. Steve Trudell's with us.
You're listening to The Songwriter Connection with Dave Linehan. Find us on Facebook and YouTube at The Songwriter Connection Podcast. And find Dave at thedaveconnection.com. Now back to the show with your host, Dave Linehan.
It's such a pleasure to get to sit down and talk with Steve Trudell, our guest today. By the way, if you're listening on YouTube, and we are out there, even though we're not a video podcast, we always publish on YouTube every week, and that audience is growing there, too. We're hoping someday to be able to monetize there. So it's very important. It means a lot to me if you just hit that like button and the subscribe button there, and you'll never miss an episode. And that helps me more than you'll ever know. We're talking with Steve Trudell, who has worked with all of your favorites. I mean, just about name an artist, and this guy has contracted with them, helped to put a show together. He's traveled all over the world. And Steve, thanks again for taking time to sit down around the dining room table.
My pleasure, Dave. Thank you for having me.
You you do a lot of writing with this Elton guy, Dave Johnson. Well,
no, yeah, but I don't write. Let's be clear, I don't write songs with Elton John.
No, with Davey Johnson.
Johnson, yeah. Davey and I have written a lot of songs together. He's one of my best friends, and that throne belongs to Bernie Taupin over there. I've met him a few times, and he's not a friend of mine or anything like that. I don't really know him that well. Yeah. Everybody else there I know. Uh-huh.
How'd you and Davey get together?
I lived in a house in California with a guy named Jace Smith. And Jace, funny enough, he's best friends with Rick Springfield, the music artist. So he spent a
and
lot
Soapstar.
Of his. So I met Jace through doing a corporate gig in Las Vegas with my dad's orchestra.
Oh, that's cool.
I met him at a recording studio, and he said, "Hey, man, I got this house, and you want to write some songs in California?" And I was like, "Yeah, I was writing some lyrics. Uh-huh. I wasn't writing melodies. I wasn't involved in it like I am now, you know." But I had a bit of a knack, I guess. I had a knack for writing lyrics. Something was brewing there, you know. But I went out there, and I moved into a house with him and a couple other guys, and he was doing his own thing away from Rick Springfield. Jace was a good songwriter and a singer. He was an artist. And he was good looking, and he was cool, and it was a certain time and place. It was California.
Oh, yeah.
And we hit it off, and we bought motorcycles, and we started just living the life out there. And it was funny because I was working for, you know, my father and Tony Bennett and all these Connie Francis and all these, you know, these Liberace and Bob Hope. And I was working for these different, you know, people with my dad's orchestra. And I told my dad, "Look, I'm going to California and I'm going to be a songwriter." He's like, "Yeah, you go ahead." So I'm leaving success for no success, for a struggle.
It's a big job.
Was lyrics. I had nothing to go on, man.
Dang.
Well, how naive was that? But I had a good time with Jace.
Did you?
Yeah. And
he wrote some great songs, did you?
We wrote a few songs together, but it turned into riding our motorcycles around and going to parties is what it turned into. I wasn't doing anything, you know.
You were living the rock star life, basically, kind of.
I don't know what I was living, man, but we were reasonable looking, and we had motorcycles, and we didn't have a lot of money, but we lived in this house with a couple other guys too. Uh-huh. So there's like four guys living in this house. So, you know, that was that. And then, but somehow, this woman who Jace was dating knew Davey Johnstone from Elton John's band. Mm-hmm. And so he was going to produce Jace's record, which he did do. So I went to this house.
Yeah.
Which was owned by Chuck Norris's wife.
No kidding.
Weird situation, I guess. But I don't know. I didn't really know. There was a bunch of people there, and they had kind of a small record company, and they had a recording studio. It was a nice place. And I just went over there. I didn't know anybody, and I would just sit there, you know, and just watch everybody. But Davey Johnstone was there, and he produced Jace's record. And Elton John came there that day.
Wow.
One of those days.
Yeah.
And I met him there.
Yeah.
And he came to listen to Jace's record with Davey, and, you know, and they were all very nice.
Wow.
And then Davey said to me, "Hey, I hear you write lyrics." Jace told me, Jace was always a very generous person as far as connecting with people. He loved to do that. And we're still friends.
You know who's good doing that here in Nashville? is our mutual buddy, Justin Love.
Oh, that's how you and I met.
Through Justin.
Yeah. Justin's part of this new project that we're doing. Yeah, absolutely.
And I want to talk about that.
He's one of the five singers, yeah.
Yeah.
We're doing something unique here. We'll get to that.
Yeah. We can talk about it now? That. Yeah. Or you want to talk about your songwriting?
No, well, that's how that started with Davey. Mm-hmm. And so he said, I'm going to do this record called War Pipes, and would you be the lyric writer for it? And I said, yeah, what do I do?
I wanted to talk about the term that you hear a lot of is top-down writing, or top writing.
Top-line
writing. That's the line I was looking for.
Yeah.
Top-line writing. Explain that a little bit for folks.
Well, top-lining around here seems to mean to me, maybe I'm wrong, you know, but it seems to be you write lyrics and melody.
And melody.
Yeah. And I did not do that with Davey ever. I've never been in the room, which I think is funny because Davey and I, Lenny Kravitz is a mutual friend of, and Lenny always will say to me when I see him occasionally, he'll say, I still don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
You and Davey write songs together, but you've never been in the room together to do it. And I said, no, never. I send him the lyrics and he puts the music to it.
Wow.
And I have nothing to say about
it. It's kind of how Bernie and Elton did, right?
Yeah. Well, that's the world he comes from.
Yeah.
I guess that's what he observes, and that's what he's, because he's written songs with them through the years, I guess, too, you know?
Yeah.
And Davey's a really important part to the whole Elton John thing.
He has electric guitar, especially on, like, Goodbye Yellow Road.
All his acoustic playing and his 12-string playing and his mandolin and his sitar playing. And he's a really, really, really good melody guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that guy, he's a force.
So if you're a lyric writer, it's really good to get along with a good melody writer.
Absolutely. Yeah. At that time, I was just sending stuff to him. And like I said, I had nothing to do with melodies or anything like that. And he had a force over there. He had Guy Babylon and Bob Birch. He had the Elton John band, Nigel Olsen. He had those guys tightened up. That was his band. He built that band. He's a leader of it. He commanded it. He's been the leader of all of Elton John's bands.
That's great.
You know, he rehearses all that stuff. People don't. That guy's such. I know he gets his due, but not on the level that he should.
I agree.
That guy's. Yeah, his guitar playing. His
incredible.
Yeah, and then when he and I would get together, it was pretty magical. You know, we really saw eye to eye on the lyric thing. You know, and I was a title guy, and you couldn't have a better training ground. He taught me a lot.
He
would look at a lyric and go, well, you know, I like the title. And, you know, I think this is pretty good. I'm giving it, you know, this one will be, you know, he's going to really like this one. Right. And then he'd be like, well,
tear it up.
Let's rewrite that verse. And it was psychology, but he did it. He had such a good bedside manner with people, with his musicians and his band.
So kind of a mentor as well, you know?
Yeah.
As
and I've seen him, around Elton John, how he handles that as well. And, you know, he's a force, man. He's a beautiful, beautiful human being, and he's a beautiful music director. He's a level of my father and all those guys, and I introduced him and my dad. They became friends.
Did they?
Yeah. They really admired each other and loved each other very much. Wow. Always for many, many years.
Fantastic.
But that's the same level as my uncle Davey, you know, and then, you know, enters David Paich into that mix too. He's
Toto.
Yeah. David's one of my best friends that's another force. Songwriter, arranger, melody, player on a level that, you know, you just,
yeah.
So that's where the bar has always been there, because I came out of my dad and in my uncle's world. And to go to that, then to go to Davey's world, and then it really trained me. And then then I met Brad Davis, a songwriter in Nashville. He was playing guitar and music directing for the Forrester Sisters a million years ago, which was a Warner Brothers act.
And so they were great.
In 1990 or something, early 90s, I got together and
you came to Nashville.
And I moved here.
Yeah,
yeah. And I hooked up with Brad Davis and. We started writing songs together. We thought we were good, but we were not, you know. So the Davey thing actually came right after that, and so then I went to California and worked there for a while. So I would go back and forth out of Nashville all through the years. I've always kept some contacts here. I've lived here at times now, but now I'm living here.
Now you live here. For how long now? When did you come here for good?
Well, it was about two and a half years ago.
Really?
Yeah, okay. I came back to you know, and still knew some people. And then Brad and I got together again.
Yeah.
Which was really cool. And Jimmy Mattingly, who lived in this house with us over in East Nashville in the 90s, he plays fiddle for Garth Brooks and for Dolly Parton.
And
you
for
know?
Dolly, yeah.
Yeah, those are his two. Yeah. That's great. Jimmy's a force. So, yeah. So you know, I rekindled with those guys. I went over to Blackbird and I decided to maybe
Blackbird's a great studio.
We could sort of back up on something here.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
So I still kept things going in Detroit, mm-hmm. and it kept things going out on the road, and something happened years ago, and just to touch on it, but. Davey and his wife Kay, they lost their son, and I was with them when it happened.
Oh, no.
It happened back in California, but we were in Chicago with Elton John, Billy Joel tour.
Oh, man.
Backstage when it all went down, and his son tragically, he was like a nephew to me.
Oh.
You know, I'm close with all Davey's kids, and yeah. So. That was really tragedy in our lives, and I don't know that any of us have ever recovered from that. This was such a long time ago, but you know, he was 10 years old,
how
and
do you
his
recover?
Name was Oliver.
Oliver
Johnstone. Yeah, and he was a wonderful, cool kid, just a force. And
accident?
Drowning in a pool.
Oh,
yeah, but
horrible.
But anyway, so it was a tragic time. And so everybody's lived with that, but after that, our songwriting cooled, and we would do things occasionally, things like that. But Davey's writing songs again now, and he's doing his stuff, and he made a record, and we haven't done something, we haven't written stuff in a little while, but I'm sure we'll do something, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, we're still best buddies, you know.
Yeah. And does he come into town a bit?
Does he come here?
Yeah.
No. No, I don't.
You go out there.
Yeah, I go to California, see him. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I stay at their house. And, yeah. You know, yeah.
But well, things have changed since when you were here in the 90s to coming in a couple.
Yeah, well, look, here, yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. Getting into
big
that.
Big time change.
Well, I was a Yankee, and I was not accepted here.
Yeah.
And there weren't many of me here. Mm. Not at all. And Brad.
Not in those days. Yeah.
No, and Brad and Greg and Randy Stewart, who's an awesome guy from the past. He's John Randall now.
Yeah.
I guess he's John two Randall. Names, but
yeah.
But I know him as Randy. But what a talent that guy is. You know, what a force and
unbelievable. Yeah, and a great writer.
Yeah, he's a talented guy. Mm-hmm. You know,
to those Marfong tapes with
oh yeah,
Lambert and
yeah, I saw that on TV. I saw it on
great records,
Austin City Limits. Yeah, I think I saw.
Oh, good stuff.
Yeah, Randy's a man, and Brad too. Brad and Greg Davis, those are his. They were all friends. They came from Texas, all of them. So they were all best buddies. And
wow.
You know, and to see all of them do what they've done in their different respective businesses and things like that, or from afar, is cool.
Exactly.
You know?
We get sidetracked here, but going back to what, coming back to Nashville and the change, how things have changed.
That was rough. That was rough for me. And those guys, why I mentioned all of them, because they didn't mind having me around. They took up for me. I was a Yankee, man. That was a thing. And
I didn't want to believe it. And when I would come down in the radio days, they would tell me that. Yeah.
You know. It was a thing for me. And I experienced it with, won't go get any names or anything like that, but it was, you're swimming uphill, you know, you're current, you know, against the current. That's what I really
against
want to
the
say.
Current.
Yeah.
Right.
But,
yeah.
But it's not, you know, that I came back here now and it looks like, you know what this reminds me of here now?
What's that?
It reminds me of Los Angeles in the 90s.
Does it really?
That late 80s, 90s. Yeah. the traffic is starting. Everyone's going to make it. There's a sense of community. There's a sense of
there like really is. There's and that's what I love about these towns.
Yeah, there's a sense of excitement where mm-hmm. everybody wants to meet everybody.
Everybody does.
I don't sense in California anymore that that's. I go there and it's changed. And it's, you know, I've never fully lived in California. I've been committed there. To not to an institution, but but I've been committed to working there. You know, a lot of flights, man, and a lot of, you know. But Davey and his wife Kay have always been gracious and made a home for me there. You know, made me part of their home. So I just never bought a house there and really put down roots in that way.
Right.
But it's always been a place, and New York City too. There's a whole other world there for me.
You worked at all of the major music capitals.
In London.
Yep.
In England. I have a lot of friends there, and I've written songs there, and I've worked on orchestra projects from Abbey Road to whatever, you know.
Fantastic.
So keeping the different hats on, you know.
Yeah.
But then Brad and I rekindled, and long story short, here, I was back in Michigan, sort of jumping around here.
Uh-huh.
I started a group called Your Generation. Cause,
I was going to ask you about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, Your Generation's a force. It's been around 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
They do about 200 dates a year. It's great. A corporate,
mm-hmm.
private, festival cover group with four lead singers.
Four lead singers.
There's a music director called Brian Lord, and he came out of Mitch Ryder's band.
Wow.
Young guitar player, and he's been with me 10 years. And we have 15 people, full-time employees. Wow. We have an office that runs all of it, and they do the bookings. And so my job is to oversee the creative part of it, make sure that, you know, I have a stylist to do the clothes, you know, lighting guy, sound guy. So I own a truck, I own PA, I own all that stuff that I need. It's a self-contained. We can go out in the desert and play a concert for 5,000 people.
Wow!
And we don't have a full-time agent. It just is known, and so it's called Your Generation.
Your Generation
in concert, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so I decided in Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, I'll do Y'all's Generation.
Love it, Y'all's Generation.
So I checked to see if I could get the name, and I got it.
All right,
and I went like, okay, cool. So I decided, I got back with Brad and said, hey, man, do you want to have a look at this? I'm going to do a cover group thing out of Nashville.
Nice.
And work, you know, a couple hundred dates a year, like the other thing, want to build it.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, I don't know about that. He's like, I, you know, sure, if you want me to do some dates or whatever. And then once we started talking, he's like, why don't we write some songs? And I go, oh, boy, you know, I hadn't done that in a while. I was busy because Josh Groban and Michael Bublé and Trans-Siberian and Evanescence and Disturbed and all this shit keeps me pretty busy.
I bet.
You know, touring could keep me going pretty good. And I don't have to be at all my gigs because the orchestra's on stage and so on and so forth. But I spot check and I go out on the road, you know. But
sure.
But I just did do 30 cities, which I haven't done in a long time. I'm pretty beat up right now.
Wow.
But,
yeah, because we had this as scheduled.
We did.
I lost my mom, then you went on tour. And
yeah.
So finally we get this together, and I just really appreciate it.
Yeah, we both lost our moms around the same time, man.
I'm so sorry, bro.
Yeah, I know. Sorry to you, man. Yeah. But, so, you know, I rekindled things with Brad, and then one thing led to another. Let's call Jimmy Mattingly, and let's build this thing. And so we got a hold of Ralph over at Blackbird.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, we went in there and we put a bit of a, you know, pretty cool group. I got Dane Clark from Mellencamp's band. Dane's a great friend of mine, and he's done some legit work for me too. Cause he's a good reader and stuff. And so I got Dane on drums. He's been with Mellencamp for, 25, 30 years and played on a lot of those newer records. He does his touring and everything. And Dane's quite a player.
Wow.
And Mark Hill, bass player here. Dave Cohen, keyboard player. All, you know, wonderful top guys here, They get voted every year to the best of this and the best of that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so we got them. And then we brought in we brought in Jersey Gina, who is the only non-country person. You know, I wanted to make a country project. I want it to be country music. Mm-hmm. And so,
yeah, that's cool.
And so her and Jimmy got together, and she sort of brings a rock, pop, violin thing, and Jimmy plays that. So then they got together, and they really fell in with each other musically and started doing arrangements. That was really a cool moment.
Nice.
To have these two fiddle players, you know, doing harmony work and writing out arrangements that fit the music that we were doing. So Brad and I got together and we wrote about 30 songs.
Did you?
Yeah. And then, wow. And then we brought in...
All for this show.
For this Y'all's Generation.
Y'all's Generation.
And then we were at Blackbird and we spent, you know, a month there. And then got a hold of Jason Lenning and... I love listening to the Jackson Dean records that he does, and you know he's partners with Luke Dick, who I admire his work. I don't know him, but I certainly admire what he does.
Yeah,
and they're buddies and they're partners or whatever, and they do their thing.
Wow.
But and Jason's a guy for hire, and he produces, and he's one of the top engineers here, you know, and he's from the Lenning family, which is
legend.
Yeah. You know, his father and his brothers and all that.
Yeah.
So to tie up with him, we had a lot in common. And we became very good friends.
Awesome.
Out of that. So mm-hmm. It's nice when you, if you're working together and you get a friendship out of it, very unexpected with him, you know,
yeah.
I figured we'd do something together and I'd see him around.
Yeah.
And, but it's not the case, you know. So we became friends, and
that's great.
Yeah, and we spent time. So
you ready to take this one on the road?
No, we're getting there.
Getting there.
We're getting there. This is really turned into a thing. If Jason was here, he'd be like, "Yeah, this has really turned into a thing." Yeah, but we keep going, and you know, it's. But like I said, it's two dozen songs, and so now we're getting ready to put sort of the icing on the cake, but put some, you know, again, very much keeping this one country. But what it sets it apart is it has five lead singers.
Oh my.
Yeah. And wow. They're all handpicked here.
Five dog nuts.
I found them. I went out and met them all and found them all. And, yeah.
Who do you got? Can you say?
Uh-huh. I can tell you. So, so we have Justin Love.
Justin's amazing. Guys.
We have Randall.
Been on this podcast a couple times.
Yeah, we've had Randall Fowler.
Wow,
we got Randall. Randall's an interesting guy. He just did one of the American Got Talent or
okay.
Three of them went on the road together. He's a big singer. You know, singers are kind of a thing for me too for contracting because you know, being part of Trans-Siberian Orchestra, we have a lot of singers.
Yes,
and we have a lot of musicians.
Yes,
and to a degree, there's a turnover, so I'm always looking for talent.
Wow,
you know, so if you're out there anywhere, you know, give us a call. You know, but I'm always looking.
Yeah.
And in every country and in every state, and I, you know. I think my database is probably about 40,000 musicians globally.
Ooh, wow.
Now. So
incredible.
Yeah, this is that. It's that pretty about nice. That. Yeah, it's that yeah. that much. But
so and you try
to keep
three?
Up with them. So the other three.
Yeah.
You've got Kim Dunn, Kimberly Dunn. Kim is a singer out of Texas,
uh-huh.
and she travels around a lot and does her thing with her husband. They have a band, and she's one of the female singers.
Great.
And then Kendra Remedios.
I love Kendra. Kendra's, saw her the other day.
Kendra's a force.
She's good.
So we have two girls and we have three guys. So, and then we have a guy named Isaac Cole.
Isaac Cole.
Yeah, and he's country.
Is he?
Yeah. He's like a young Richard Petty to me.
Really? Wow. Interesting comparison.
No, he's a young man. They're all younger people. They're a force. And together, you know, they're Fleetwood Mac, man. They're the Eagles. They're that level of, you know. And we've been bringing them in, and Jason and I have been producing them, and Brad Davis is, you know, producing as well. So the three of us are.
That's so
but
cool.
When
you're ready to get this on the road,
well,
come on,
we'll
do
gotta
it.
We'll
get bring them in here.
We got to get it done, and then we're going to film it.
There you go.
With a small orchestra.
Uh-huh.
And we're probably going to film it either at the Ryman or somewhere like that. I don't think we're going to have an audience, although probably within that week, we'll do an unplugged show.
awesome.
Ad listening room or something like that, and we'll invite people to see what we got, and we'll introduce Very it cool. that way. Very but cool. it's going to be, it'll be with one of the big management companies. It'll be a major label. You know, we're,
yeah.
You know, I'm connected to a few things doing what I do.
Imagine.
And so we'll take it there, and we'll see who, you know, I'm already talking with some people about what it is, but it's called Y'all's Generation.
Y'all's Generation.
Yeah.
I love it.
So we're,
great idea.
We're doing that, and then Jason and I are going to produce a single artist, which I it's really not my thing. You know, I like these conglomerates more. You yeah. know, they're more a pain. They're more difficult to deal with, and they're more expensive, but they're unique.
Yeah.
You know, and... you know, if you find success with it, as you can see with Trans-Siberian Orchestra, something like that, you really find it. Wow. You know, it really can, it can really have legs, you know, because you're not dealing with one singer's decision. And I love artists.
Yeah.
But, you know, the day is based on, you know, how's so-and-so feeling today? Well, he's got a sore throat. Mm. Yeah. Well, you know, well, good. We got four other singers, so he's going to sing their songs tonight. And your generation's been that way.
Absolutely.
We don't miss a gig.
Yeah.
We don't cancel a nothing. We've never canceled a date in 10 years, and yeah. we average 200 a year. So that's the plus of that. But trying to keep that together is a challenge.
Yep.
You know?
I'll bet.
But... I this is going to be interesting.
That sounds like it.
And these people can get to it. And but finding the right song, the right fit. So when they come in, the interesting thing is that we wrote the songs, we demoed the songs. Brad sang them and demoed them. We use him as our demo singer, yeah. even for the girl songs. You know,
really,
yeah. But it's contemporary country music with a very traditional flair to it. So we cover it's y'all's generation. So what generation are you from?
Yeah,
we want to touch on
all y'all.
We touch on a little bit of this, a little bit of the past, a little bit. Cool. You know, it's three things.
I would think the Ryman would be the perfect place for that. I used to work at the Ryman, and I love that place.
Yeah, so if we can, you know, make a rental deal with them and go in there and film for a couple of days and do our thing and bring in orchestra.
Oh, make it happen, man.
So it's going to be an interesting way to kick it off. Yeah. And I'm very determined. And, you know, I do all this on my own. I've been a one-man show.
Mm.
And, you know, from financing to music to all of it. And so I don't know if I'm any good at it, but I'm not looking for any, I didn't throw a fishing line in the water either. You do, you know, I don't care who you are in our business, in our world.
Yeah.
You do wonder, you know, nobody sure. knows how any of this works. And then we all know how it works. Yeah. There's an intangible to this. Right?
There surely is.
You know? Who knows what a hit record is?
People ask me that all the time. I have no clue.
And the stuff that really takes people by storm in the business, the one thing that I know for sure is that when Adele showed up, or when Aretha Franklin showed up, or...
Name the genre. You could do Garth.
Yeah, you know? Right. When he showed up, you know, I remember meeting him at a radio seminar with Brad when we were quite young and thinking, like, this guy's from Oklahoma. Boy, he's excited. I don't know what he does, but he's certainly excited, and he's kind of a cool guy. And, you know, like, so, but when music comes out, when people first heard whatever it was, the Beatles or Led Zeppelin or the Judds or whatever... Garth Brooks or whatever current things there are, you know, one thing for sure, when you come with something just a little left of center, that's when people, you know, when people heard the Black Crowes for the first time, they went, oh, I know that. That's Rod Stewart and the Faces. That's the Faces. That's Ron Wood. And that sounds like that.
Yeah.
But it also sounds like Steve Marriott and Humble Pie a little bit. Yeah. Or it also sounds like maybe a little bit of the Rolling Stones.
Yeah,
but that's the shit that catches people's attention.
It does. That's why we always say, you know, don't lock yourself into a genre. Find out who you really are as an artist, you know. It may be, there's already Garth and there's already, you know, Taylor Swift's and
yeah,
and who are you though? But I mean, bring what you got to the table, develop that. Yeah, you can listen to all those and borrow from here and there, and then you come up with your own thing. But be authentic and true to you. And that's the biggest advice that we give every week on this show. And that goes not only if you're an artist, but if you're a songwriter too. Find your songwriter inner voice, you know.
Yeah.
Right? Is that good advice?
Absolutely, man. You know, you got to use a little bit of the radio to look at what's happening. You know, the sounds, the sonics and things like that. And yeah. I'm sure that the 10 major producers here, I'm sure they're very aware of, you know. But then I've met some of these people and had good chats with them. And they're like, no, I don't even listen to radio at all. But I do what I do. So you wonder, you know, when someone like, then there's people like Lainey Wilson, you know, when first time I heard her, I went, well, you know, she's got this if she wants it.
Yeah. It's an amazing voice. And then you think of people like Morgan Wallen, you know, who comes out, you know, and Morgan just a couple weeks ago saying, I don't really listen to country radio. I don't listen to country music, you know, but like, he's like the thing right now.
But I think if you put, if you turn over the soil there, so to speak, you know, put the shovel in the dirt.
Yeah.
Hoe up some land there, you'd find Joey Moy. I mean, this guy, this guy's dialed in mentally.
He is.
You know, I don't know him. I know people that know him and have heard about what he does. But if you get into these producers here, you know, when I listen to what Randy's doing, what he does with Randall Lambert, you know, and the sonics that they use and the things that it's interesting stuff.
It really is.
They're really Parker McCollum's drum. His drum sound alone to me is it, you know, and that's probably Randy with his engineers doing his thing, you know.
Absolutely.
But but when you hear someone like Lainey Wilson show up, you go, okay, that's next level.
Yep.
That girl has the career if she wants it.
Yep.
As long as she wants it, it's there, you know. And that's the other thing. And then you start dealing with artists and temperament, and you start dealing with having five singers together it's a handful for me.
Do you really want all that?
Yeah, but then, you know, then something like your generation, it's worked so well, and we'll lose a singer once in a while. And we'll replace them with someone better or someone same as or whatever to try to keep a quality up. But trying to keep the quality up when you're dealing with that many people, it's like an orchestra.
Yeah.
You know? But it's all I know.
Yeah.
And it's the way I do, that's the way I do what I do.
And you've been so successful, and I'm sure you will be with this. So I wish you all the success with this. Keep me posted on the all, because I want to come see that show. And if you ever want to do a little, you know, acoustic unplugged around this table, we can do it.
Yeah,
I've done it.
We'll do it with the five singers.
Exactly.
That'll be killer.
We can do it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we're going to be doing a bunch of interesting things with them once we get rolling. But we got to get this music done.
Yeah.
And we're going to go back over to Blackbird and record the orchestra. You should.
Yeah.
When we do that, come on in one day.
I'd love it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
How do people reach you? Do you want to be reached?
Yeah, people can reach me by my email. That's really the way to get me.
Yeah.
You know, send me an email, stevetrudell@yahoo.com.
There you go.
Yeah.
And you've got a webpage out there?
Well, I have a website, but I do have Your Generation.
Check it out.
Your Generation in Concert. That website, people can always reach me. My assistant is on there. She handles a lot of our stuff through the office. We have a full-time office that we run, and you know, that's it. Yeah, but
good.
You know, I'm always looking for singers, man.
There you go.
You know,
that's why I asked.
Yeah, so we're always looking for different projects. You know, so
very cool.
Yeah,
Steve, thank you for your time today. I really appreciate it. Really good to sit down and talk with you, get to know with you, and appreciate all the old stories and stuff.
I appreciate you, man. And keep doing what you do. You know,
we ain't gonna stop now. Tell you that.
Quadrophenia, man.
Quadrophenia. We didn't even get to that story.
Love rain or me, man.
You bet, man. Love it. Steve Trudell, our guest. Thank you for joining us. And folks, thank you for joining us too at home or in the car, wherever you are. And as I always say, right on. WRITE.
We hope you enjoyed this intimate glimpse into the world of songwriting and found inspiration in the stories shared by our talented guests. Remember, the magic of music lies not only in the notes and chords, but in the emotions and experiences woven into every lyric. Until next time, keep listening, keep creating, and keep the melodies alive.